Every play, every musical, begins with some writer putting words on a page. Hello, and welcome to Stagecraft, the Broadway radio podcast that talks to playwrights and musical book writers about the shows they've created. My name is Jan Simpson, and my guest this week is Jonathan Abrams, who wrote the book for the new musical, The Heart of Rock and Roll, which has just opened at the James Earl Jones Theater. The show is a jukebox musical, or as Abrams prefers to call it, a catalog musical, that uses the music of Huey Lewis and the News. But this isn't a show about Huey Lewis's life. Instead, Abrams has created an original story that is as unapologetically upbeat as Huey's songs are. Hello, Jonathan Abrams. Welcome to Stagecraft.
Hi, so nice to be here.
We usually start off these conversations with a brief description of what the show is about. I'm particularly interested in having you describe The Heart of Rock and Roll, because it's not the usual kind of musical when people think of jukebox or catalog musicals. So would you talk a bit about what the show is about?
Of course. If I can't talk about what the show is about, then we're in real trouble. The show is a love letter to the 80s, first and foremost. It's a, you know, sort of manifestation of the music of Huey Lewis into a narrative form. Johnny Hughes being a big inspiration, his film like 16 Candles, Pretty in Pink, Breakfast Club, but even graduating to some of his more adult fare like Uncle Buck and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Just a Chicago set comedy, coming-of-age story, full of humor and heart. In terms of the actual plot, it follows a character named Bobby Stivick, played by Corey Cott, who's sort of this traditional 80s Tom Cruise-ian kind of underdog. He's scrappy, he's ambitious, he gets out over his skis, and that's kind of his fatal flaw. But he's earnest, and he means well, and we love him. And he's a recovering rock and roller who's found, you know, a modicum of success working in corporate America at a cardboard box making company in Milwaukee. And the plot of the show really is about how he is gunning for this promotion over a long weekend in Chicago, where he is from, where he, you know, crashed and burned in the rock and roll business. And it's a homecoming for him. And over the course of this weekend at the Great Lakes Shipping and Packaging Convention of 1987, he's going to face his biggest test yet in the corporate world, while also getting a second chance at the rock and roll dream that eluded him years before. So it's really a question of, for anyone who comes to see it, if you had a chance, but it wasn't a guarantee, to pursue that thing that you always love doing and give up the stability that you currently have, would you take that risk? And I think it's a very identifiable and relatable theme, and hopefully told in a fun and kind of entertaining way.
How did you guys come up with the idea for this book, specifically the plot that you've just laid out for us? Did you try other plots, or?
It began with the lyrics. Honestly. Yeah, it began with the lyrics, because obviously everything is in service of the words that are already written. We can't adapt. We adapt the lyrics a little bit, but wanted to be, you know, show some fidelity to them, of course, because otherwise, what's the point? We have to honor the music that Huey created in the 80s. And so the way I approached it, honestly, was to write the lyrics of his hit songs, the ones that we knew an audience would sort of demand. Mm-hmm. The Power of Love, If This Is It, Working for a Living, Hip to Be Square, and I wrote them on note cards, and I pasted them up on my wall, and I stared at them. And you would sort of formulate like a puzzle. Okay, if Working for a Living means this, then Hip to Be Square means that, which means The Heart of Rock and Roll means this. And then you would just, you know, and sometimes that would lead us to nowhere. And sometimes I would go, you know what, that's a decent path. And then finally I kind of landed on the story that I just walked you through. And yeah, I think the anchors of it were the heart of rock and roll is still beating. Well, that could be a band trying to convince their long lost frontman to join a rock tour. And then, of course, all the cities Huey mentions in the song would be the tour dates. And then, okay, well, then what is Hip to Be Square? Well, that's a guy who was once in a rock band who decides he doesn't want to be in one anymore and he wants to play it straight. You know, I used to be a renegade. I used to fool around, but I couldn't take the punishment. I had to settle down. Those are the first lyrics of our play. And so it's like, okay, connecting those two songs together was really the spark where I'm like, that there's a line from A to B.
Was there never any thought of doing a Huey story, the story of his life, a bio musical?
Not really, because as Huey will tell you, John, my life just ain't that interesting. So it was like, okay, that's a non-starter. Although the funny thing is, he said that years ago, and since, little tidbits come out. By the way, Huey Lewis scored a perfect 1600 on his SATs. Huey Lewis went to Cornell. Huey Lewis left Cornell, I believe he graduated, and spent a year busking throughout Europe and like has wild tales of what went down there. And I'm like, this is actually really interesting. Your life wasn't boring, but nonetheless, we were pregnant at that point, so there was no turning back.
Now, how did you become involved with this process of turning Huey's songbook into a musical?
A movie producer that I've worked with approached me a decade ago. He'd met Huey socially, and through that conversation, he had said to Huey, hey, has anyone ever approached you about doing, you know, Mamma Mia type musical with your songs? And Huey says, I get approached all the time, but I'll tell you what I tell them, all about the story. So if you can come up with a good story, I'm happy to hear it. And so my friend Tyler, the producer, called me and said, hey, are you game to take a stab at this? And I said, if it means that I get to meet Huey Lewis potentially, yes. And he was a childhood hero of mine. I loved his music. And so then I, you know, went to the note cards. And a few months after that, had something that felt decent enough to present to Huey. And we had lunch at the Fairmont Hotel in Santa Monica. I remember it very vividly. And after I walked him through the story, he looked at me and he smiled and he said, that's pretty good. Keep going. And so that's all I needed. And I said, and now here we are many years later.
How involved was Huey in the process?
Very involved. You know, he's wonderful in the sense that he, having worked in film and television, having worked with masters like Robert Altman, and also, you know, starring as Billy Swin, number 31, I believe, in Chicago on Broadway, he understands the creative process both for stage and film. So I think he was a perfect collaborator because he understood my point of view of how I was approaching the work. And so he knew when to leave me alone or us alone. And he also knew when to lend a hand. And I think that respect flowed both ways. And anytime I was about to do something like alter the lyrics of a song, I didn't just assume it would be okay. I asked permission. And almost every time, or probably every time, he granted it. He might question it or challenge it or help me come up with a better lyric than the one I presented him. But he was always very open to taking his, you know, raw material and serving the story in the best way, which I, of course, really appreciated. It was a very gracious thing of him to do. And I think that the work is the better for it.
Now, you say you were a Huey fan even before Tyler Mitchell, your producer, came to you. Were you someone who also follow musicals before this?
You know, not really. Musicals and musical theater just was not something that was part of my childhood for various reasons. But I lived in the Bay Area, and that's part of why I loved Huey Lewis, because he's from the Bay Area. And I was a child of the 80s. You know, I was little, but I grew up in the 80s. And yeah, it was something that we just couldn't maybe afford to do. I think I saw The Nutcracker. That was probably the extent of my theatrical experience as a young person. And then as a young adult, things that were kind of in the popular culture, Wicked, things like that, of course, I went and saw when I was in New York or when they came to the Pantages in Los Angeles, where I live. But then 10 years ago, when I endeavored to do this, I realized how little I knew about the form. And so I dove in, saw everything I could in LA that came through from Broadway. And then I would come out to New York pretty frequently, starting like around 2010 or 12, and try to see as many shows as I could, really playing catch up. And then also reading the books for the, you know, the big famous musicals throughout history. So I did my homework as best I could without the head start of, you know, having a lifetime in the theater.
Was there one book or one show that proved to be particularly useful?
Mamma Mia was very useful. That was one that I had seen on my own. Mm-hmm. And I always looked to that as the benchmark for what we could be, in the sense that it took music that had a brand, had a flavor. You know, Abba's music's very joyous and fun, and it feels like a Greek vacation, right? It really does. And so, and it's an original story. It's not about the band. So I looked to that and studied that religiously of like, what is this doing? Why does this work is really the question I asked, and tried to solve that almost mathematically. And then once I was able to kind of understand it to some extent anyway, then it's like, okay, I got that. Now I'm free to go off and do it, do my own thing. But having that knowledge of those that came before was very helpful.
Now, you are also a screenplay writer. These are connected but slightly different art forms. So what was the toughest challenge for you in putting together the book of a musical, which is really a challenging job?
It's a very challenging job. I think that doing The Heart of Rock and Roll has been the greatest creative challenge of my career, for partly the reasons that I mentioned, and that I didn't know what I didn't know. But it was also a benefit because I went in open-minded and willing to receive help. And I didn't act like I knew better than anyone else. And Gordon, our director, and Lauren, our choreographer, were so helpful. And Brian Yusufer, our music arranger and orchestrator, gave me a real education. And this is how it's done. And so, you know, I think that the biggest difference between screenwriting and writing for the stage is that in a movie, you have the benefit of the camera. And you can close up on film. And you can highlight detail. And so sort of, in a bigger sense, nuance is a virtue. And I think for the stage, it's a little bit different. You have to be able to articulate something and make it very, very clear, straight on. And so you're sort of writing, I think, in a slightly broader way, but it's not even about broadness. It's more about clarity. You have to be crystal clear. And as you create characters and you create moments, it's not like a film where the director just has to get it once, print it. No, this has to be something that works so well that an actor can do it the same way, 8 shows a week. And then ideally, another actor can come in and replicate that performance. So the calibration is much tougher, I think, and on stage than in, on film, which is why typically musicals take a decade to get to the stage. Movies often can as well, but that's usually more of like a, you know, the studio development problem, as opposed to, oh no, they need so many drafts to keep going and going and going.
Now, I think you guys did this at the Old Globe in San Diego, yes?
We did.
How has the show changed, if at all, since you first did it there?
We've refined it. That is the biggest thing that we've done. I think that people ask, well, what's changed? I could get granular about what we've changed and the new numbers that we've put in and the things that we've, you know, altered. But to put it in sort of metaphorical terms or analogy terms, we had a bottle of Johnny Walker Black in the Old Globe. And now we have a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue. We refined the product and made it a better or best version of itself. And it's just draft after draft after draft. I think I wrote 67 drafts, full drafts of The Heart of Rock and Roll. And we were never satisfied, and we kept pushing ourselves. And the story has always sort of remained more or less the same. But how do you make those moments undeniable? Like I was just saying, that someone can come in 8 shows a week and get it every time. And that, having something that's just so clear, that was really the goal. And at every juncture, I think we pushed ourselves to, you know, to achieve it. Hopefully we have.
Now, having gone through this experience and opened on Broadway, would you do it again? Is this something that you're thinking, maybe I'll try another?
I plan to do it again. You know, spoiler alert, I have the rights to the Luther Vandross catalog. Wow. Which I am so excited about. Yeah, it's a beautiful, you know, sort of experience just to acquire them. I had to meet with, you know, the catalog rights holders at Primary Wave and at Luther's management, but, you know, sort of even more so, his estate made up of his family members. And, you know, it's just such a tragedy that we lost him as young as we did. And so I walked them through what I would do. And it was like a very emotional afternoon here in New York. And at the end of it, they said, okay, you know, like, we have faith in you. And so we're very early days on that, but I'm really, really excited about it.
Is this a bio musical or is this another craft story?
This is another, it's another original story. Yeah. Luther's life was complicated. And I think that it was just better to do an original story that honors, in a similar way that the Heart of Rock and Roll honors some of the essence and even certain aspects of Huey Lewis's life, but not in an overt way. The plan would be the same. I think there's something really nice about that. A lot of the bio musicals that you see, I mean, the story does typically follow a similar rise, fall, rise. So it is somewhat difficult to make them feel fresh and original. So I'm always looking for the most creative freedom when I approach these things, because for me, it's less the story of the person that really tends to inspire. It's more the art that they created. And so I love just being able to also give fans and audiences a way to receive that music that they love, or maybe don't even know. But if they know it, they'll see it in a different way. And if they don't, they'll go, wow, was that an original score? I am tickled every time someone is typically, you know, Gen Z's, see the Heart of Rock and Roll, and they don't know who Huey Lewis is. And they're like, wow, and those songs, like, they think the songs were written for the show.
That's a real compliment.
Oh, it's such a compliment. Because that's the, you know, back to the challenges of doing, there's writing a musical and its inherent challenges just doing something for the stage. Then there's writing a catalog musical where you have lyrics, like I said, that, you know, you kind of have to serve. And so it's just, it's very tricky. You know, the word shoehorn is thrown around pretty frequently. And we just went to such great lengths. That was always a big thing for me, that I wanted the song to feel as much as possible unexpected. Like, okay, if the lyrics are this, then it literally means whatever. And thus, we can't have the song be that. There are a couple instances where it's unavoidable. But, you know, Bobby sings, I want a new drug. And he's not talking about a narcotic. Right, he's talking about something else. And so that's, I think, a good example of what we aspire to do with most of the songs.
Well, I think it's really great that the theater world, Broadway, drew you in, and now you're going to stay.
I am so overwhelmed with gratitude that the community has welcomed me in.
Well, we're glad that you found your way into this world, and we're looking forward to what you do next, particularly since you're already started on what sounds like a really great project.
Well, thank you so much.
Yes, and thank you for talking to us about this one. So thanks for coming on.
I appreciate you, and thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for joining us. We hope you'll come back next time and that you'll listen to all the other Broadway Radio podcasts, which you can find on BroadwayRadio.com.